This edition of The Stack was first broadcast on the 27th of September, 2014, on Monocle 24.
A retail concept that's past its sell-by date, a local fixture that's no longer fit for purpose, or an essential feature of neighborhoods around the world that's an anchor for the whole community. Today, on the special edition of The Stack, we mourn the passing of a very dear family member, our much-loved local newsstand. Make no mistake, your friendly, local, independent newsstand is under threat, dear listener. Today on The Stack, we look at the forces that are causing newsstands and kiosks to clear out and what can be done about it. We start by chronicling the closure this week of Greens, our local source for fine print on London's Marylebone High Street.
It's a shame. I knew I could always come here. There's a nice little shop next to the Monocle Cafe, which is pretty unique. It's a great selection, not as rich as this. But print should never go away. People still want this kind of connection.
And we also look at what's still working as we tour the European continent and pay a visit to kiosks that grace the boulevards and piazzas of Paris and Milan. Could it be that the freestanding kiosk has more mileage than a newsagent occupying potentially expensive real estate?
These are highly visible structures, and so advertising is now a major revenue stream, and kiosks increasingly double as billboards for forthcoming films, fashion brands, and luxury goods.
And we speak to a veteran of European product design whose kiosk brought pride to a city and country.
Nowadays, kiosk has to show its function. It has to speak to the customer and to pedestrian and to the people who are using a public space.
All that plus a few lessons from our editors a bit later in the program, so stay with us in our campaign for better newsstands today on this 109th edition of The Stack, Monocle 24's dedicated print industry review and analysis show. Hello and welcome to Studio 2 here at Midori House for this special edition of The Stack. I'm Tyler Brulé. This week's been a rather sad one here at Monocle, as we received news last Sunday that one of our favourite local newsagents would be pulling down its shutters for good. Yesterday, Greens, at the centre of Marylebone High Street, bid farewell to the community and packed off its remaining wares to sell at a sister outlet further east. Greens has been both the archetypical newsagent selling all those little necessities, as well as an impressive array of specialty and mass market print choices. More importantly, it's been a community anchor. On a street that's becoming increasingly dominated by chains, Greens was the type of shop where the man at the till would ask, "How's Mom? Is she coming over from Toronto soon?" After 25 years under the same management, many will show up today and wonder where they'll go for a copy of La Repubblica, German Architectural Digest, The Lady, Die Zeit, Le Monde Diplomatique, and hundreds of other titles. What happened to Greens is very much part of a trend that can be seen not only across the British capital, but cities around the world. To find out more about what is causing this decline, our producer David Pleasant hit the high street and also heard the industry's frustrations from the UK's National Federation of Retail Newsagents.
It's a busy weekday lunchtime and Marylebone High Street is teeming with activity. Fast becoming one of London's prime lunching spots, this area seems to be happily profiting from being that perfect urban medium, a neighbourhood that is full of both local residents and workers who come to service the many surrounding offices. The retail opportunities here seem to be equally buoyant, with high-end boutiques and big national chains dominating the quota of units. Despite the hubbub, for one shop here, things are not so rosy. For the residents and workers of Marylebone, Greens has provided that kind of personal service that is in very short supply here in London. Today, Greens is closing. I'm going to step inside to meet the manager and some of the customers. So maybe you could just tell us how much you use this store in particular.
Well, I work in the neighborhood, and my mother lived in this neighborhood for many, many years. And when she lived, I can only imagine if she still lived here, the great loss it would be, because it's a connection. First of all, they have a little bit of this, a little bit of that. But among London newsagents, there are very few places like that. There's one in Fulham, but with this great selection of international magazines and magazines for every taste. And it's kind of the end of an era.
So you would actually miss this shop.
Yes,
why is that?
I would, because I work a couple of days a week and I do pop in the shop regularly, yes.
And what do you think once this shop will go, this street will be like? I mean, will it have something missing that you actually need?
Definitely, because I'd have to go down to Oxford Street in order to get any cards or anything, yes.
It's a shame. I knew I could always come here. There's a nice little shop next to the Monocle Cafe, which is pretty unique. It's a great selection, not as rich as this. But print should never go away. I was in a shop the other day in Soho, and somebody was trying to negotiate with the shopkeeper. If I give you a pound for your charity box, can I take a picture of something that's in the magazine so I don't have the magazine? People still want this kind of connection.
I sell cigarettes, chocolates, cards, magazines, and I have a very personal touch with the customers for the last 25 years. And customers feel very sad, me going.
And in terms of what you think the reasons for the fact you're going are, what's kind of led to this decision for you to shut the shop?
It's the margin level percentage of the goods which I was selling were going down and down and down, shrinking the profits. So I thought better sell it off.
We were talking earlier about if we focus on magazines and newspapers, this has gone to the big chains increasingly in this city. What was your experience of, you must have known customers come in asking for certain titles, certain newspapers, certain magazines. Any kind of trends that you've seen over the years?
I've seen since Waitrose started selling free papers, my Saturday, Sunday trade is definitely gone down because they get free. If you buy £10, you get a Times free. If you buy £20, you get a Financial Times free. So obviously my selling of newspapers has gone right down.
And you're a businessman, and I'm sure you have your eyes on other places, other locations. What are you going to try and focus on? Where do you think people like you can still make some profit? And where do you think newsagents should be placed? Is there any space left in London for newsagents? Are you pretty bleak?
I don't think so, because there are these, what you call, multiples. They've got so much money, they pay you off and say, okay, we'll pay this much, and the newsagent will say, okay, give me the money, I'll go. That is what the trend is now for next 1 year or 2 years. And I've seen a lot of changes, not around here, Baker Street Station, everywhere.
That was the manager of Green's newsagent here on Marylebone High Street, who today closed his shop of 25 years. Perhaps out of modesty, or perhaps out of a rather British sense of not wanting to make a fuss, he did not want to give us his name. Sadly, what is happening at Green's has already happened to hundreds, if not thousands, of other newsagents across Britain. The decline of print sales doesn't explain the whole story, that is clear. I wanted to speak to somebody who might be able to tell me what is really at play here. Ralph Patel is the Vice President of the NFRN, the National Federation of Retail Newsagents.
Over the years, the retailers have enjoyed reasonable margins from newspapers and magazines. Now, over the years, publishers and wholesalers have got a little bit greedy and started cutting our margins. There obviously has been a drop in demand for print. However, I do strongly believe that this has been partly, if not completely, I suppose almost brought upon themselves by the publishers, who have gone into other things. They've gone to free papers, which really is crazy. They've gone into the iPads and, you can get it on the internet sort of stuff. They've tried to give it away and then suddenly realised this is costing us too much, and therefore they've started perhaps charging for some of their services online. You know, one of the things I always say to people, you do not devalue your product. And over the years, the publishers themselves have devalued their products by either giving it away or doing some promotions with some of the big supermarkets. And as a result, of course, the little individual stores have actually suffered.
There seem to be many factors that have led to the London newsagent's current sorry state. A drop in demand for certain types of print is undeniable, but more endemic is a chronic mismanagement of the market. This seems to be driven by the unrestricted access that chains, or multiples, have, as well as the various incentives that high street owners and authorities adopt in an effort to maximise footfall and profit quickly. The most frustrating thing to see is the constant flow of customers that is keeping Greens busy right until its closure. One thing does seem to be clear. If the print offering in London is to remain, planning authorities, the major distributors, and the newsagents themselves need to come to the table.
That was David Pleasant speaking to Ralph Patel, the Vice President of the UK's National Federation of Retail Newsagents. Now, while independents struggle and bigger chains attempt to figure out how to improve their offer, the world's press distributors, retailers and publishers will be convening in Cannes from Monday at the annual DistroPress conference to sell their wares, cut new deals and address the general state of the industry. We'll have more from Cannes next week in a follow-up to today's special edition of The Stack. Now, we're off for a short break. When we come back, we head to Italy, France and Slovenia to take to the streets. More in a moment.
There are lots of chunky themes running through the new October issue of Monocle. We survey the world of modern diplomacy. We send our autumn style guide down the editorial runway, deliver part two of our retail survey, and publish our fresh-faced guide to Auckland and New Zealand. Yes, it's a big action-packed issue, and here are our editors to tell you more about what to expect this month.
In the design section, we head to Greece to report on a new wave of architects that has come out of the crisis with a newfound patriotism and a keen ambition to help the nation back onto its feet. We then meet the bright lights of Brooklyn, the key players in the borough's increasingly world-class lighting industry, and then the new young upstart on Copenhagen's design scene. And then we cozy on down in two jealous-making homes, a Bauhaus villa in Alsace and a summer house in Menorca.
In the edit section, we check out an age-old Portuguese porcelain maker building a business to last. Head to the Estonian capital to visit a portside suburb on the up and sit down with Martha Stewart for her perfect meal. We also survey the best in travel from New York to Jakarta and this month's foodie finds from Singapore to Sao Paulo.
The October issue of Monocle is on newsstands now. Why not become a subscriber? Head to monocle.com to find out how.
Hello and welcome back to the special edition of The Stack with me, Tyler Brulé. Now, despite the lament of so many newsagents here in London, you don't have to travel far to get a very different impression on the state of the newsstand. Across continental Europe, newspapers and magazines are more likely bought from dedicated kiosks rather than inside the shop of an independent retailer. Despite increasing digitization, with the Daily suffering particularly, the thousands of newsstands in France and Italy continue to serve as the backbone of print distribution. In many cases, they are also an essential and much-loved part of everyday city life. In a bit of a continental tour, we first head to Paris, where our correspondent Tom Burgess-Watson paid a visit to one of the city's hundreds of kiosques à journaux and came away with a few thoughts on this venerated part of Parisian life.
When I walk out of my front door here in Paris to buy a newspaper or magazine, it is sometimes difficult to decide which direction to take. As is the case for so many other Paris residents, a 5-minute walk in pretty much any direction from my home will take me to one of the city's 400 or so kiosks. Walking straight ahead takes me to the kiosk at Hôtel de Ville, which is one of the old-school variety, a green metal structure which doesn't seem to have changed much since the mid-19th century when the architect, Baron Haussmann, was busily reshaping Paris. If I turn right, I arrive at the Pompidou Centre, in front of which is one of the modern style of kiosk made of glass and chrome. They first started to appear in the 1980s. Both of these types of kiosk can be seen right across France, varying in size from about 10 to 20 metres squared, depending on the needs of the area. But their value isn't only an aesthetic or sentimental one. Each vendor seems to have an incredible knowledge of current affairs, and unlike in other countries where I've lived, I get the impression that they have actually read a great number of the publications they sell. This comes across when they suggest other titles you might want to consider buying, or when they give their unsolicited opinion on one of the stories of the day. Despite a tough economic environment, the kiosks don't appear to be disappearing as some had forecast a few years ago. In fact, a new one has just opened up around the corner from where I live, further complicating my dilemma as to which direction I take to buy a paper. Certainly, over the course of the last 15 years, there has been a sharp drop in French newspaper sales, particularly notable in the cases of the left-leaning daily Libération, the centre-right Le Figaro, and the sports paper L'Équipe. But the trend isn't uniform, and sales of certain other titles, such as the financial daily Les Echos or the tabloid Aujourd'hui en France, have remained stable over the same period. Roughly half of all newspapers bought in Paris are picked up at a kiosk, so declining sales would undeniably dent revenues for the kiosquiere. But the vendors appear to have been diversifying their business model and their product offering. After all, these are highly visible structures, and so advertising is now a major revenue stream, and kiosks increasingly double as billboards for forthcoming films, fashion brands, and luxury goods. Paris kiosks are also starting to fill the niche of a convenience store, of which Paris actually has very few, by selling useful daily items such as sweets, drinks, and umbrellas. And so together with the rotating Morris column, the Café Tabac, the yellow letterbox, the oxidized green metro entrance, Le Kiosque has, over the course of the last century and a half, earned itself a central position on the streets of the French capital. Like so many other people who live here, the sense of affection I have for my local kiosks, and the sense of respect I have for the kiosquiers who run them, only seems to grow as the years go by. In her 1960 song, Kiosque à Journaux, Edith Piaf sings about all the important things you can learn from a trip to the newspaper stand.
L'Humanité, Le Figaro, François.
Les travailleurs ont le droit de savoir.
Qu'un vendeur est phosphate, Rio, Tinto.
La princesse portait un nouveau chapeau.
Zizi place 17, gagnant 22.
And, she sings, the more we learn from the pages of newspapers and magazines, the happier we are. I tend to agree. Perhaps Edith Piaf was a news junkie like I am. For Monocle in Paris, I'm Tom Burgess Watson.
That was Monocle's Tom Burgess Watson in Paris, next to another city where the kiosk is very much alive and kicking. Italy's rectangular or octagonal edicola, or newspaper kiosks, are a familiar sight to natives and visitors alike. Early each morning, the newsagent will open up what can seem like a Pandora's box of bewilderingly varied print options, celebrity rags, serious news, and regional titles, as well as all manner of other strange products. Monocle's Ivan Carvalho stepped inside one such edicola.
Italians are by nature fond of tradition and take their daily rituals seriously. First, there's the trip to the cafe for the morning espresso, followed after by a visit to the local news agent to catch up on current events. For fans of print and all things old media, the venerable edicola, or news kiosk to those not Italian speakers, is a rich source of information. Even in today's fast-moving world, where people snatch snippets of news on smartphones or browse online at work, the country still puts out dozens of dailies, and readers are still flocking in large numbers to the estimated 30,000 kiosks across the Bel Paese. Your average edicola is not much to look at, barely a few square meters of real estate on a street corner or piazza, typically staffed by a lone occupant who rises before dawn to unpack bundles of freshly printed broadsheets. These tiny metal outposts would make any self-respecting media baron drool. Hundreds of glossies, journals, newsweeklies, and the like are arranged in tight bunches from floor to ceiling and cataloged at arm's reach so that the news seller can easily extract them at a moment's notice. Like trusty librarians, news sellers help clients with queries and soon learn their customers' tastes. The odd newsagent even goes out of their way to deliver to residents' doorstep on occasion and keeps the papers for when people go away on vacation. Regular patrons can often be seen at the edicola, lingering after a purchase for some much-needed chit-chat, be it about the news, the latest football scores, or just good old-fashioned neighborhood gossip. Mothers with youngsters in tow are often a frequent sight, as publishers will bundle gadgets, playing cards, and other trinkets in titles aimed at kids. Adults are tempted, meanwhile, by DVDs of Hollywood films that news magazines sell together with their titles. All in all, it's a bonanza for the consumer, and within a short walk of their home, too, as in big cities, it's hard to go a few blocks without seeing an edicola open for business. Given their role in daily life, an Italian's romance with the printed word, it's likely the edicola will not disappear anytime soon. And for publishers, that's music to their ears. For Monocle, in Milan, I'm Ivan Carvalho.
That was our Milan correspondent telling us about the culture of the newsstand, or edicola, in Italy. And finally, we jumped the border to Slovenia and to its picturesque capital, Ljubljana. In terms of Yugoslavian design history, probably the most famous exponent are the modernist lines of a newspaper kiosk, the so-called K67, from the year 1967. Its iconic curvature and clever modular function was successfully exported across the world. From Warsaw to Baghdad, a little piece of Yugoslavian design prowess survives in many of the world's cities, even as that country has long since disappeared. David Pleasant spoke to the K67's designer, Slovenian architect Saša Mektić, to find out why his kiosk was such a success.
If you come into old city which is refurnished or redesigned or went through the process of beautification, then you have to be very careful. When you want to have an accent, you put, let's say, red point or red spot, like kiosk or any other color, but it should be designed. On the other side, I think nowadays kiosk has to show its function. It has to speak to the customer and to pedestrian and to the people who are using a public space. So it should be carefully and very skillfully designed, and using all kind of knowledge we have and possibilities we have to make interaction between the citizen and the objects of certain functions.
And that was our producer David Pleasant talking to Saša Mektić of the kiosk K67 in Slovenia. I'm now joined by our editor, Andrew Tuck, our creative director, Richard Spencer Powell. Gents, just before we talk about the state of the newsstand and retail, and we want, of course, to be a little bit solution-driven here, I've also dragged you away. We're closing a very, very large November issue. Andrew, highlights.
Well, there's a good survey again. We've had a real run of these, and we've got a huge one. It's 48 pages. It's all about Oslo and a really surprising take on that city. It's also the issue where we do the part two of our design directory for the year. And this is one that really kind of focuses on homes. It's everything from door handles to the neighborhood that you want to live in. And they both look super handsome.
And maybe a bit of a, not a dry run, but probably a bit of a practice exercise, because we also have another book to get out by springtime, I believe, on bookshelves.
Yes, the third book is going to be looking at the home and architecture and our very kind of distinctive take on what makes a place that you want to live in.
And Rich, also the running guide series we've been doing with Nike so far, so New York also coming up as well, correct?
Yes, that's right, a third one. We had a little break in the summer. We just did a fashion special. But yeah, there's a full running guide in here. And the issue in numbers, I'll give you a number for this issue. It's 17.5. And the previous issue was 17.25. That's the spine in millimetres. So we've actually gone up by 0.25. So it's bigger, and that's down to the design directory paper bulk. So
okay, well,
there's a fact for
anyway,
you.
Anyway, we'll be getting first copies in probably the next 10 or 11 days. Quite a few long faces around here. Yesterday, people were going over to the High Street, which is just about three blocks from our offices, because of this closure of Greens. And you know, obviously, you know, as you know, at the start of the program, we've been really sort of unpacking this problem, where there seems to be two things at play, Andrew. There's this. On one side, there's this global narrative which says that, yeah, people, you know, they don't want to buy print, or if, you know, if they do, if they want specialized print, then they can, yeah, they can go to specialized websites and find it. But for some reason, when you go off flying, you're probably going to be reading everything on a tablet device. So therefore, we don't need to put magazine stores after security anymore. And we've seen this as a problem in a variety of places. And then we just see, you know, the squeeze that happens as well, that maybe the kiosk or the newsstand, the newsagent, whatever you want to call it, is no longer an essential part of the neighborhood anymore.
No, we've lost a great store that was just around the corner from us. And we don't know the exact reasons they've gone. But what was great was here was somewhere just a few feet from our front door, where you could go and get all the magazines from around the world that you actually find it quite hard already to find in London. And that's gone. What the strange thing seems to be happening is, you know, that the idea of the, you know, the kiosk, the newspaper store, where you actually knew the person who ran it, where they kind of would hold newspapers for you, they did deliveries, all these skills and all these services are vanishing, and we're being left with a chain or two, which, you know, they of course have some magazines, they don't have a great collection, but they have no passion for what they're selling, and they have no part in the community. And that's what we know, that, you know, when we were in Lisbon, I remember we went to a tiny, tiny store in Lisbon, and the guy sells 60, 70 copies of Monocle every month. And the minute you went in that store, you understood why. It was because he is part of the community, both the design and the wider community in the city, but also his neighbourhood. But when you go in, he says, oh, have you also seen this magazine? Can I show you this? He's got good display. He understands that, you know, print sells if you engage with people.
Mm. Rich, are there two other things at play here? You know, maybe on one side, what I'm hearing Andrew say is that you go into the shop in Lisbon, it's well designed. If you look up and down this country, I can say the same thing about, you know, Canada, Australia. Oddly, a lot of independent news agents haven't gone through the same type of design revival rethink that maybe that's happened to coffee shops, that has happened to so many restaurants, that they are actually caught in time a little bit. You haven't sort of seen a lot of them actually tarted up. You know, you see strip lights still. They're not very pleasant environments to be in. So as much as we can sort of moan the fact that, yeah, that Greens is gone, Greens also maybe didn't sort of keep step with the rest of the high street. Do you think that's part of the problem?
I think so. I think in Green's case, they've simply been forced out by rent. And I think the landlord's just been a little bit greedy. And I think it's a good point you make about that news agents tend to be scruffy, strip lighting, you know, suspended ceilings, and often poorly displayed. But still, I would rather take that than, you know, than having some other awful fashion store there.
Mm.
And I think there's a problem that we don't have enough sort of newsstand kiosks actually on the street, on corners. We don't seem to have these in London like you do in Paris or in Zurich.
Yeah.
And if rents for spaces are going up, then let them go somewhere else. I mean, why can't the mayor of London get 100 kiosks around like he can get bikes?
Yes.
If he can find, you know, parking bays for bikes, why can't we have kiosks for newsstands? Because, you know, I think they actually should be protected. I mean, as a resident of this neighbourhood, you'd be, you know, heartbroken to see that news agent go, because like Andrew says, where are you going to go? You're going to go to Selfridges?
And I think, Andrew, you raise a good point. You know, of course, landlords want sure bets. They want to make sure that a company can pay rent. But I mean, we've also just seen during the period of the crisis, also what happens to high streets. If you put, you know, too much money into too many chains, well, five of those chains all go bankrupt within the space of 6 months. And they're very high profile closures. And suddenly you have a rather derelict looking high street.
What's interesting, especially in the UK, is that news agent market has been dominated by essentially mom and pop stores, or by, and often by, migrants who came to the city who found that as a way of kind of selling, you know, magazines and finding an inroad. And they're all being squeezed out by these kind of one or two kind of bland chains. But the fun thing is, I don't think you have to kind of have an identikit store. They don't all have to be in kind of hipsterville. You know, Tyler, when you and me travel, you know, we've been to railway stations over the past few months, you know, in Germany, in Paris, and in the good places, especially in Germany, for example, or even in the Scandinavian region, you can go to a rail station and you can find somewhere that displays hundreds, if not thousands, of magazines. And I think there's two things you need. Places that have just everything, because then you go in to buy one thing, you buy 10 things, then print survives, or you need the kind of the do you read me model, like our favourite newspaper and magazine shop in Berlin, where things are displayed in a more kind of succinct and edited way. I think there's place for both, but what there isn't space for in the moment is this terrible middle ground where people don't know what they're doing.
I mean, it sounds to me, Rich, like you need to get upstairs and start to doing an identity for the London Press Centre, because I think, Ed, what you're saying, you can, you know, go, you know, the length and breadth of the city, and there's nothing that comes close to what you would find in a German train station with those, yeah, as you said, literally thousands of titles. You know, I don't know, maybe like 40 or 50 different newspapers from the Balkans, and likewise all over Eastern Europe. We can find it's on the doorstep. You know, this is the doorstep of Germany in many ways, but there's just not that sort of breadth and range. And I think you need that to also stimulate the market.
Yeah, and I, you know, I'm always aghast when I hear this whole iPad edition fable, because I travel on a 20-minute train journey and I see lots of people with iPads and iPad minis and devices. No one's reading magazines on them. You know, maybe people are reading books on Kindles, but no one's doing that with their iPads. So we definitely need newsstands, and we need places where we can go and get a well-curated selection. And, in, you know, return to the point about maybe some of these places are shabby and therefore they can be pushed out because we can get greater rent for the space. Well, what happens when we get rid of all of our dry cleaners and convenience stores and they all get pushed out? I mean, to live in W1, I mean, you'd have to go to Selfridges for everything.
Yeah.
And, you know, what are the big brands? What are the, like, the Condé Nast think of that? You know, they've got a 400-page fashion magazine filled with Bond Street-style advertisers, and yet their clientele have to travel to Acton to go and buy a copy of it because that's the only place you can afford to set up a newsagent.
No, and Andrew, I think just maybe last word, taking it to your program and The Urbanist as well. Yeah, I think the one thing that I'm going to miss Greens going is just going in, you know, seeing the same gentleman behind the counter and just says, you know, how's mom? You know, when's she coming over from Toronto next? I mean, that is not going to happen at probably most chains.
No, and again, you know, what was good about him, you know, he had everything from, you know, the stamps when you wanted to post, you know, a birthday card. Yeah, he had some confectionery things. But when you walked in that store, there was every kind of magazine that you wanted. And just a last point, what's interesting is I have also found it strange how the chains in the UK especially, they don't reflect society. They don't reflect who lives in London.
No.
We're in a neighbourhood where there's tons of French people, there's tons of Italians, there's people from, you know, from Russia, all sorts of people. But you go to any newsstand around here and it's like it's edited for the 1950s version of the UK. And that's what's so strange, is all these opportunities being missed at every single corner.
Gentlemen, we're going to have to leave it there. I think it's going to be a discussion that will continue and go on and on. And that is the end of this 109th edition, this very special edition of The Stack with me, Tyler Blair. Producer has been David Pleasant, always is David Pleasant, and usually behind the glass, it's also Claire Urban managing the knobs and dials. If you have any comments or queries, then do drop us a note to info@monocle.com. Remember, we're back next week. In fact, I am not on the road. I believe I am here next week and the week after as well. For all of us here at The Stack, at Midori House, goodbye.